Interlocking letters appear on a stark white background, forming a logo. AJH Films. White letters flicker over a black background. Passion Pictures. One by one, six worms wriggle from a black background and twist themselves to form a logo. Cook Films. A sepia-toned photo shows a woman and three men seated in front of four women and a man, all standing. Titles appear. AJH Films presents a Passion Pictures production in association with Cook Films. In another photo, a woman in a wedding dress stands next to a gentleman wearing a suit and holding white gloves. Four elders sit posed, with three adults standing behind them and a girl and boy at their feet.
When you create a story about yourself that's based on a lie about who you are and who your family is, sooner or later it's bound to be revealed.
In a portrait, a young couple poses. In a later photo, the aging man sits with his elderly wife and their daughter. On a lawn, the daughter sits with her own family.
It's a reflection of a state built on falsehoods and lies. The product of violent political changes.
Various family stills appear.
The story of someone looking for the truth about the past, the truth about themselves. Who are we really? A person who is looking for a way up and a way to be somebody in a part of the world where history has been manipulated.
A goateed young man smiles in a photo. As brilliant white light fills the view, a title appears in red letters. Keep Quiet. A brown-haired guy with a backpack slung over his shoulder trudges uphill, trailed by an unshaven young backpacker. Director of Photography, Marton Vizcaletti. Editors, Ben Stark, Kim Gaster. More people toting bags join the uphill trek. Original score, Philip Shepard. A view of the trekkers fades into another of urban commuters bustling shoulder to shoulder. Text appears, Budapest, Hungary. The travelers descend a staircase, many with faces downcast. Viewed from behind, a burly man with close-cropped hair makes his way through a terminal. Executive producers Kami Nagdi, Andrew Ruamon, executive producer John Batsik. The burly goateed man from the photo, now with graying hair, pulls a rolling luggage cart to a ticket window.
I'd like to buy a ticket for Auschwitz. Thank you very much.
He steps away, making room for an aging bespectacled brunette.
One to Auschwitz, please.
The man and woman sit people-watching on adjacent benches in the terminal. Producers, Danielle Clark, Nicole Stott. Producer, Alex Holder. Luggage in hand, commuters proceed down a long rail platform. Directors, Joseph Martin, Sam Blair. A view from a gently moving train shows the Budapest city skyline. Overhead, electrical lines glide past in rhythmic fits and starts. In a train compartment, the aging brunette and goateed man sit across from each other. As she blinks behind her eyeglasses, he stares out the window at the countryside blurring past.
The moment I picked up an issue of Hungarian Forum in high school, my ideological education was pretty much decided.
The man's gaze wanders to the woman's forearm, where a series of numbers are tattooed.
That paper was full of very anti-Semitic articles. It advocated a Jewish global conspiracy, the Tel Aviv-London-New York axis that wanted to control Hungary, Budapest. A very negative picture formed in me of the Jewish religion.
Chanad Segedi. The goateed, gray-haired Chanad lifts his head. He appears in a photo as a bright-eyed younger man in front of a map.
By the time I graduated from secondary school, I had built a perfectly crystallized right-wing nationalist worldview. My politics continued at university exactly where I left off at grammar school.
A photo shows him holding a striped flag.
There were lots of young people from right-wing groups who shared my ideology. I wanted everyone to believe in the world as I saw it. So it was with great pleasure that the party was finally established.
A Jobbik banner features a double cross symbol.
Anti-Semitism and discrimination of Jews was a powerful motivation. I was a member of the party from its foundation in 2003. I was part of the hardcore who started it all.
Police wearing helmets and bearing shields rush through a street where people assemble holding flags with red and white stripes.
In 2006, riot police clashed with demonstrators. An atmosphere resembling civil war reigned in Budapest.
Police dispensed tear gas to control the projectile-throwing crowd.
The public felt a huge collective anxiety, high unemployment, deteriorating public safety, all because of the unsuccessful left-wing government.
Demonstrators pump fists.
You fucked up!
Officers surge.
It was clear that the country was heading into crisis. Jobbik was glad to see that tension, as it could convert it into political capital.
Riot police take up positions, silhouetted against a bonfire. Atop a vehicle, others blast demonstrators with a high-powered hose.
I was on the ground reporting as a journalist.
András Dézsó, investigative journalist.
There were a lot of people on the streets, mostly right-wing. Jobbik used this space as their stage. Many of these extremist groups attached themselves to Jobbik. They became their sort of allies.
Anne Applebaum, political journalist.
One of the legacies of communism is a legacy of distrust. Distrust both for your neighbors and for people who you know, but also distrust for the government. Jobbik seemed to offer something new, something energetic. It offered power to younger people. Csanád Szegedy was absolutely one of those young people, and he needed something to be part of.
Csanád poses before the flags of Hungary and Jobbik.
Pushing boundaries has always been part of our political strategy. We wanted to do something big, something spectacular. So in the summer of 2007, we founded the Hungarian Guard, a paramilitary organization, as if we were an alternative power structure in Hungary.
A procession of men in black caps and vests marches.
The whole thing had an atmosphere of liberating troops arriving. It was a beautiful and uplifting event.
A news graphic identifies a speaker, Gabor Vona, Jobbik party leader.
The guard was created to finally complete the change of regime and to save the Hungarian nation.
A young boy watches, seated atop a man's shoulders.
We are the people. We're starting to get stronger, and you have to get organized.
A newscast plays.
Just 24 hours after the Hungarian Guard was formed, there have been over 2,000 new recruits. But this guard of black uniforms, which has had their flag blessed by priests, has created quite a bit of hysteria.
One of the things that Csanád was always interested in was power. Running the Hungarian Guard gave him that sense of being in charge of something. His love of symbols and his understanding of how they can be manipulated was very fundamental to his character. And Csanád immediately caught on that you could make things exciting by giving people something to look at, something to march in.
The Guard stops in formation.
Across the country, people started wearing symbols that were not the arrow cross Nazi symbols, but were very similar.
In photos, a paramilitary group's flags feature crosses with arrows at their ends.
We knew very well that it evoked fear, but we were prepared to defend it when asked. And say perfectly innocently, why would we even want to evoke fear? Who'd want that? No one. These are completely innocent symbols. Who's afraid of Hungarian peasant garments?
Csanád appears on TV.
The Hungarian press asked, why keep looking back? Forget the past and move on. I say it's building the future with the help of the past.
Rows of guards stand rigidly in a vast city square. At a night rally, supporters hold torches.
Skinheads, anti-Semites, weapon lovers. We were determined to let everyone join, no matter who they were. We let the genie out of the bottle. We let all the anger loose. And we didn't think about the consequences.
Demonstrators clash with police.
Jobbik plays openly with taboos, and the Hungarian guard was the greatest game with taboo that they played.
People flee the approaching guards.
We're challenging the narrative that fascism was bad and fascism was defeated. Another, there's an alternative version of Hungarian history which has been preserved in secret, and now we can bring it out in the open again. Csanád Szegedy was absolutely part of creating that sense.
May the Lord give you a brighter future.
A TV ad.
Here is the new force. Let Jobbik in. We protect Hungarian lands. Restore law and order. Multinationals must pay taxes. To jail with the culprits.
Because Hungary belongs to the Hungarians.
On June 7th, vote for Jobbik. In 2007, I was founder of the Hungarian Guard. In 2008, I became the national vice chairman of Jobbik, second in command. I was just 26 years old, and my name was on voting papers all over the country.
Jobbik, 14.7% vote.
Jobbik, which we'd been building for years, suddenly gets 14% of the vote. I remember coming out of this small room, and we could hardly walk with everyone coming to hug us.
Among a throng of supporters, Csanád stands with the trio from the ad, Krisztina Morvai, Gábor Vona, and Zoltán Balcsó. The victorious politicians lift their arms.
There was a great celebration. It was fantastic. Even on my deathbed, this will remain one of the best days of my life.
Jobbik emerged from obscurity to clinch that 15% and three seats in the European Parliament, revealing a striking shift to the right in Hungary. The global financial crisis has hit.
Szegedy addresses the guard.
Next Tuesday in Strasbourg, there'll be the first sitting of the European Parliament. I will take my seat in the European Parliament wearing this waistcoat.
He holds up the black vest of the Hungarian Guard, then puts it on. Photos show Szegedy with various dignitaries, then seated in Parliament wearing the black vest and putting on headphones. As electrical lines glide overhead, the countryside blurs by the train window. On board, the aging brunette addresses Csanád.
How can you deny it? And what good is denying it?
There was a Holocaust, okay, but there were many other horrors in World War II. Many Hungarian soldiers died at the River Don. How's the Holocaust different from any other national disaster?
They totally dehumanized people, taken like animals somewhere to be slaughtered and burned. This sort of thing had never happened before.
Aren't the Jews responsible for this?
What do you mean? Responsible for what?
For triggering aggression against themselves. They refuse to assimilate. They represent a different culture.
And what's wrong with that? Every nation has their own culture.
But Jews refuse to have national patriotic feelings. Instead, they insist on their cosmopolitan views. They will not assimilate into any other culture.
No. Where we're settled, we live our lives. I remember my father was at the front in World War I. He made so many sacrifices so that we could win. What do we get in return? We are transported and killed?
What irritated me with the Jews was, For one, why do we have to talk so much about the Holocaust? Okay, there was a Holocaust. It's the tragedy of the Jews. But why do we have to be reminded of it every week? This comes across like they are constantly reminding me that I'm guilty, but I have nothing to do with this whole story.
The survivor rolls her eyes and shakes her head. Segedi glances out the window. A photo dated 90-12-6 shows young Chanad posing with his parents and brother.
Our family was very politically aware. Politics were discussed over lunch, and my father was a resolute rightist. I received an essentially nationalist upbringing. My father's family used to be rich aristocrats. They built something for generations, and then the communists took it all away. To be a worthy descendant of my ancestors, I felt I had to follow their example.
Flags fly on poles beneath a cloudy sky. European Parliament, Strasbourg. Inside, Chanad sits between Zoltán Balcsó and Krisztina Morvai.
It felt so strange that I suddenly got into such a high position. Mr. Representative this, Mr. Representative that. I felt very powerful.
Chanad addresses Parliament.
But allow me, so many hypocrites, so many people with double standards all in one place, well, that's quite something. Unlike the empty squawkings of the Socialist Party, Jobbik always provided positive solutions.
Chanad became, at a very young age, a very prominent person. He was connected to the leadership, connected to its founding, connected to the Hungarian Guard, and connected to all of its publications and activities. Chanad wasn't merely an ideologue, he was somebody who sought to organize, to make money, to fund the party. But he attempted to show himself as an ordinary young Hungarian who was in touch with the way ordinary young Hungarians are, that he wasn't part of the establishment. He had a kind of anti-establishment credibility.
Now or never, we have no more chances. The Socialist Party is the party of death for Hungary.
Jobbik's a party that plays with rhetoric, it plays games, it burns the European flag in front of the European Commission building in Budapest. They would play with some of the ideas of anti-Semitism using Jewish symbols or implies that somehow the Jews are responsible without actually saying so. And they'll often go quite far to saying things and then pull back. In other words, it's a game of hints and whispers and jokes and symbols.
A debate.
In the past 20 years, they have desecrated our holy crown. They have desecrated our national symbols. Who? Mostly Jewish artists, actors, intellectuals. Don't tell me you have not heard what a Jewish rabbi said, that all Hungary gave the world was peach schnapps and baggy pants.
Once Chanad had been elected to the European Parliament, he and other MPs and other MEPs inside Jobbik began to see that if they really wanted power, if they really wanted to become a ruling party in Hungary, if they wanted a lasting, long political career, that they would have to move away from some of the more extreme elements in the party.
András Dézsó.
Jobbik was trying to act like a parliamentary party, as well as comply to the needs of the extremists, many of whom were actual straight-out Nazis.
Camouflage-clad men hold torches.
I got into a trusted relationship with someone inside Jobbik. A picture of this really sick group unraveled, all permanently spying on each other, blackmailing each other, or afraid they'd be targets of blackmail.
In Parliament, Chanad smiles.
I had known about Chanad Segedi for years.
A man with a fit build appears on camera.
I was aware from the very beginning of Jobbik what their whole game was about.
Text appears, Zoltán Ambrus.
So when he started on his little so-called right-wing career, I had already been busy on the nationalist side for a long time. Where you have to lie, he's in his element. He's a perfect politician. He's a shit of a man.
A reflection in a window shows flags of EU nations rippling in the breeze.
One of the Jobbik members called me, saying a guy had phone called Zoltán Ambrus, and he's saying there are Jews amongst the Jobbik leadership, and your name has been mentioned. Then another three or four Jobbik members called. The same stories. This rumor was spreading.
Blurred lights of a city skyline slowly come into focus.
I passed all this on at the next Jobbik leadership meeting. Everyone said, deal with it. Find out what this is all about and make him stop spreading this rubbish.
A view through a moving vehicle's window shows buildings blurring by the highway, then a wide river stretching into the distance.
It was hard to find out who this man really was. He'd been to prison several times for arms and explosives abuses.
In a photo, Ambrus Zoltán peers through a weapon's sights.
I had been a prominent member in the skinhead movement. I don't consider myself a racist. That's not what attracted me. It was the military appearance, the military culture.
Toting an assault rifle, he poses with others in camouflage.
I've been called a Nazi before, but I consider myself a simple peasant who values traditions and customs. He was kind of arrogant. This little peasant boy will be shaken off like nuts from a tree, so no problem here then. He seemed a bit paranoid, a bit peculiar. His gestures and facial expressions seemed a bit disturbed. I was disappointed that a man like this could have such an impact on others. I assumed that he would be opening his mouth, so I assumed that he would be lying, so I had to make a recording.
An audio cassette labeled Csanád plays.
I asked him to cut to the chase. What was all this gossiping about? All the Jewish gossip.
Csanád.
You know, in our circles, there's no bigger insult.
Zoltán.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Csanád.
So you know, if you're called a Jew, that's the biggest insult.
Zoltán.
Let's get things clear then. I said that I didn't know about anyone else, but I knew myself. If someone wasn't Jewish, it was me.
Zoltán.
So, Katalin Molnár, that's your mother, right?
Csanád.
Mm-hmm.
Zoltán.
Her father is Imre Molnár.
Csanád.
That's right.
Zoltán.
And Magdolna Klein is her mother.
Csanád.
Yes.
Zoltán.
On this bloodline, we have all the documents.
Csanád.
It's true that is her name, but my grandmother wasn't born Magdolna Klein. She was adopted by an elderly couple who had no children. I talked to my grandma about her family history. She told me her adoptive parents were called Klein. Her foster father was Zsigmond Klein. They lived in the countryside. She told me stories from her childhood about her foster parents, what her father did for a living. And when I asked her about her more distant ancestors, she said it was a perfectly average family from Miskolc, but there was nothing interesting.
Csanád.
I admit I'd never really looked into my grandmother's family.
Zoltán.
The Jewish family?
Csanád.
I just want to get things clear. Based on my best knowledge, I think this is impossible.
Zoltán.
We have all the documents. Your grandmother was deported. We even have the number of her tattoo.
A photo of the young couple appears.
Maybe you can make it disappear somehow.
Csanád.
I don't know about a tattoo. I have no knowledge of any of this. I mean, she has never, ever told me any of this. She raised us as nationalists. It was never mentioned that she could be a Jew.
Zoltán.
Jewish society is a matriarchal society, so it's passed down on the mother's side. You're Jewish.
In a photo, a woman stares through piercing eyes.
I asked for proof. He said his proof was in the other room. I was thinking it was such a surreal fantasy. She's not only Jewish, but also had been deported. That was just over the top.
In a photo, young Chanad poses with his brother and grandmother.
As a farmer, I know how much genetics matter. I have no prejudice against anyone, but I have experience. You learn by experience. My experiences tell me to be careful with people of Jewish origin.
A color photo shows the elderly Magdolna Klein standing beside Chanad as a boy, as another child sits before a birthday cake.
My grandmother was absolutely blonde. She had piercing blue eyes that felt like she could look right through you. Could my grandmother be Jewish?
In another picture, young Chanad poses beside a decorated Christmas tree.
I remember, as a child of 6 or 7, a classmate told a Jewish joke. At home, my mom asked me how school was, and I told her the joke. Hitler asks a Jewish child, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" The child says, "A doctor." I saw my mom growing pale. Hitler says, "No, I meant soap or lampshade." I saw mom grow sad. No other reaction, just plain sadness. She walked off into another room. I don't know if she cried. She didn't say another word.
In a picture, Chanad and his brother sit atop a sled, their mother behind them.
I realized we talked so much about my father's lineage, but my mother's side of the family was a vacuum.
In a photo, Katalin Segedi hands Chanad a bunch of long-stemmed orange flowers. Later on camera, Magdolna removes her eyeglasses.
I began talking to my grandmother over Christmas 2011.
If I don't see your lips, I'm not going to understand what you're saying.
Is this okay? I started to ask her about her childhood. Things like, what was Christmas like when you were a child? Great snow, such great snow. You don't have so much snow these days. I was unspeakably terrified of my grandmother telling me it was all true. I asked her, "Granny, your family name is Klein, so your foster parents were the Klein family then, right?" My foster father, who gave me the name Klein, was my uncle. "Oh, then they were Germans?" She said, "No, Jewish."
The sepia-toned, multi-generational family photo appears.
This word, Jewish, was like a dagger through the heart.
The view focuses on the smiling, short-haired girl sprawled at the feet of her elders. Then the elderly Magdolna gazes up.
"So how did you escape being deported?"
Magdolna pulls up the sleeve of her sweater.
She said, "I didn't escape. I was deported."
A number is tattooed on her forearm.
Deported? But where? Auschwitz.
Chanad shakes his head.
"It's true. I am of Jewish origin."
A black and white photo of Magdolna shows the young woman flashing a toothy smile, short curls ringing her face. Young people, many toting backpacks, bustle along a city street.
I'd wake up, hoping it was all just a bad dream. Hoping someone would come and say, "You were misdiagnosed. You're not fatally ill."
Others ascend stairs into bright daylight.
It is not terminal. We just misdiagnosed you.
A gray-bearded man with a ponytail watches the crush of people.
There's just chaos. Total chaos in all my thoughts.
An elderly man lifts his head with a start.
I thought, there is no place for me to go from here.
Eyes locked on the ground, the aging man makes his way forward along with the others. A bridge spans the Danube River. Beyond, the domed Hungarian Parliament building rises from a hillside.
I called the Jobbik party director. I said, Gabor, what should I do now? Should I quit Jobbik? He said, it doesn't matter. Keep working. Think about it, Chana. We can do the whole next campaign with you. You are of Jewish origin, but you're not just any guy with Jewish origin. Your grandmother is a survivor of Auschwitz. Do you realize what kind of protection this would mean for Jobbik?
A photo shows Chanad conferring with Gabor Vona.
The world was just spinning around me.
In another, he stands at a podium microphone.
Should I really be the protector of Jobbik?
Now, a newscast plays.
Audio footage was published on Double Standard's blog, supposedly Chanad Szegedi, Jobbik MEP, being interrogated about his ancestry. Chanad Szegedi was confronted with his Jewish origins by a man who secretly recorded him in 2010.
Ambrus.
According to information, she was deported. We know when she came back.
Szegedi.
She's never told me any of this. I personally told both Gabor Vona and Chanad Szegedi. Gabor Vona's reaction was that it didn't matter that he was of Jewish origins. What mattered was who knew about it. The Jewish bomb took everything in its path. We thought Chanad was our friend, our comrade.
Chanad Szegedi is leaving Jobbik.
Chanad Szegedi's Jewish heritage has absolutely nothing to do with our decision. I felt naked. I could hardly breathe. Everything seemed so heavy. There was nothing to hold on to. I had nowhere to turn.
Traffic blurs by on a street.
I searched for similar situations in the papers, on the internet, people who had already been through similar situations. How do you deal with this problem? Slowly but steadily, reality set in. I must face up to being a Jew. Exactly what I never, ever wanted to be.
Outside a multi-story brick building with arched windows, a Star of David surmounts a gate. Rabbi Baruch Oberlander, head of Orthodox Rabbinical Council, Budapest.
I heard that on the internet you could find one of the leaders of the Jobbik party, that he's Jewish with all the papers. I said, listen, that's my expertise. I looked through it to see if it's real, and it turned out that it was real. The guy is Jewish, no question about it. If he would come to me now to ask for a note if he's Jewish, I would give it to him. So that started, you know, it started me thinking about him as a Jew. I said, hey, this has to be an interesting halachic question. You know, what does Jewish law say about a person like Szegedi Chanad? If he comes to shul, if he comes to synagogue, I didn't know the answer yet, but the question is a real question. Tuesday morning, imagine who called. I said, nah, you're teasing me, you know. What did he want? He said he wants to meet me. So what should I do?
Atop the synagogue's roof stands an arched ornament containing two stone tablets.
I felt like a gladiator entering the arena. I kept thinking, what am I doing here? I just wanted to run away. Everyone was pretending not to watch me, but they were, and I knew they were.
This was a situation I never dreamt of. You know, what am I supposed to tell him?
Rabbi Oberlander handed me a kippah. It really felt like I was getting a headache from it, like it was burning me.
Shanad touches the back of his head.
A lot of Jews were very, very upset. How could you sit down with such a Jew hater? How could you accept him and speak nicely to him?
Zaghetti met with a Hungarian Orthodox rabbi to apologize for his offensive remarks and promised to visit Auschwitz to pay his respects. Zaghetti was a founding member of the Hungarian Guard, a pro-Nazi party.
They came to demonstrate in front of my house. They threatened me on the street. The Hungarian Guard swore that we would drag out with our own hands those who we elected to parliament who have become unworthy of the cause. Csanád Szegedy, your name is now one of shame and dishonor. Where is Csanád Szegedy? Filthy Jews.
When it eventually came out that Csanád really was Jewish, the far-right websites and media went crazy. Well, of course this would be true. You know, the Jews are always disguising themselves as somebody else. You know, naturally, they've infiltrated everything. They've even infiltrated the far right. There were others who thought, it's all a lie. Csanád was playing a game the whole time. It's impossible that he couldn't have known this. People on the left in Hungary laughed. Obviously, there's something absurd and something sort of rather satisfying. He was pushed out with really nothing. I mean, he had no obvious way to make money. He had no social circle. His whole life had been wrapped up in this other group of people from whom he was utterly cast out.
Headlines read, "The End for Jobbik, Csanád turns to Rabbi, and Szegedy faces difficult learning process."
I thought my place would be in politics for a long time. I never thought it would end so quickly. I was so desperate. I was even contemplating suicide.
Csanád films his grandmother.
How much did Mom know about your having been to Auschwitz?
Well, later on she learned about it.
Did she see the number tattooed on your arm?
Yes.
She says that she never dared to ask about it.
No, they didn't ask. And we didn't talk about it.
What did you think when I started to be active in politics?
I was unhappy to see that you got into such a group. I was hoping you wouldn't sink as deep. Or that you wouldn't become such a Jew hater.
Magdolna gazes off wistfully, then facing the camera, she offers a gentle smile.
The reason why it was important to see the rabbi was that here was a person who understood my problem. He didn't approach me with anger, but put out his hand. He said, "Csanád, what you have done is absolutely horrifying. You want to change. I will give you a chance. Here is my hand. Take it."
The Star of David stands before the brick synagogue. Inside, various sacred objects are laid out.
I'm convinced Jewish law says we can accept him, and we should accept him. Every Jew has to be welcome and is welcome. And no Jew can say, "Listen, I want him out of here because I don't like him because of his past."
Csanád follows Oberlander into synagogue.
We decided that we're going to sit with him on a weekly basis and, you know, and learn and talk.
Csanád listens to the rabbi.
He had these thoughts in his mind. How can I live with the thought that everything I did till today was wrong? I never met a person like this, so broke, so void of his past, looking for a future. And I prayed to God, help me, that I shouldn't say anything wrong, but I should say all the right things.
Gabor Vona appears on a talk show.
So what's it all about? Just as we are not an anti-Semitic party, we are not a party without consequences. In this case, we had to take strong measures. Whatever Csanád chooses to do after this, I just hope he's not going to become a tool in the hands of the liberals and the left wing. He'll not be showcased in Hungary and the world as a man who regrets everything. I hope Csanád is not going to help that game.
Csanád's grandmother faces the camera.
What do you think about what's happening now?
Here, they will always be against the Jews.
So what can a Jew do here in Hungary?
Magdolna shrugs.
I don't know. Keep quiet.
Magdolna smiles sweetly. As she blinks and glances off, the view fades to black. Text appears, 6 months later. The view fades up on a dandelion meadow, the weeds gently waving in the breeze. Csanád follows Oberlander through a heavy door, then the two men pass through a cemetery.
There used to be Oberlanders here in Miskolc. Really? Yes. You come to the cemetery to think. We have to remember those who lived these lives, and also the fate of the Jewish people. So, coming back here is in fact reconnecting to your ancestors. To those who you had basically been denying.
The two men round a corner. In an overgrown patch of the lawn, Csanád addresses Oberlander.
It's a pretty slope, isn't it? A cemetery can't be pretty. But the surroundings... Look, you come to a cemetery to think a little. You don't come here to see the pretty view.
They arrive at a wall inscribed with names.
This is the Holocaust Memorial. Here are the people from Obszanto, from Csobád. I founded a Jobbik base organization at Obszanto. See, this is where you should say sorry. It's so symbolic, isn't it?
Csanád approaches the memorial.
There's no smooth transition from extreme right to normal. It's not a computer file. You just erase it and you write a new one. It's a person. It's his mind. It's his heart. It's his convictions. It's his work. It's his pride. It's his identity. Everything together.
The two open books.
He specifically asked me, do I have to admit that everything that I did and said was wrong? I told him, listen, there's no reason not to face the facts. If you come to the conclusion that you were wrong, you have to admit it. But he doesn't understand exactly yet how wrong he was.
A boat passes down the Danube, the name Isabel stenciled on its hull. On an embankment overlooking the river sit bronze sculptures of shoes, along with small candles and picked wildflowers. Csanád and Oberlander stroll alongside the shrine.
When I was young, my father told me he was in hiding with false papers. And he actually saw people being shot.
In a photo, a man wearing a star on his lapel faces arrest.
He was with a group of teenagers. And one says, let's go for the Jews. If he said, I'm ill, I have to leave, that would be very suspicious. So he went with them for a while. Then, at a corner, he turned the other way and disappeared. So they brought them here.
A grainy photograph taken from above shows streams of displaced people bearing their possessions, watched over by soldiers.
In many cases, they didn't want to waste ammunition, so they tied them together and only shot one, so they would both fall into the Danube. Unfortunately, thousands of people were killed here. When I was still in Jobbik, I didn't know where it was, but I often heard about this Jew memorial. I heard that pig trotters were put in them. This kind of hatred, this is indescribable. Why hurt people who aren't alive anymore and who died so horribly? This wasn't committed by the Nazis. Was it the Arrow Cross? Yes, the locals, the volunteers. Eichmann himself said at the trial in Israel that they didn't have it as easy anywhere as in Hungary because the locals were so enthusiastic and helpful.
In a photo, armed guards escort well-dressed male detainees.
Talking to my grandmother, she believed this would happen again. When I asked, do you seriously think the Jews will be deported again, she was absolutely certain it would happen again. All I could say was, this is a different era. But there is a very important lesson in this whole thing. That was a modern era Germany. Germany was at the height of science and philosophy. Yet, in a short period of time, they managed to, well, sink beneath the level of animals.
Csanád averts his gaze, head bowed beneath a beige cap.
I'd never felt the Holocaust was a national tragedy. I looked at the Holocaust as blown up propaganda. I thought it was untrue, completely inauthentic.
Foot traffic passes the Shoe Memorial while others linger.
When you have a regime that has been lying, for 50 years, and which everybody knows is lying, that means that you create a generation of people who no longer know what's really true.
Placards bear images of Lenin and Stalin.
There's no agreement about what history is.
Photos from the uprising show citizens atop a tank.
In that atmosphere, the truth is often hidden or disguised. Just be quiet, withdraw, convert, become mainstream, try and fit in.
In a photo, Csanád's grandparents and mother pose in a garden. Text appears, Katalin Molnár Szegedin, Csanád's mother.
The Jewish population here in Miskolc was destroyed. Very few Jews survived here. We weren't in touch with them. We didn't have any.
Csanád listens.
I felt it was more important to experience the feeling of being Hungarian, and I thought that you'd rather experience that too.
Why didn't you warn me when I was doing Jobbik and the Hungarian Guard? Why didn't you stop me?
You were so involved. You were so much part of the Jobbik hierarchy. It would have been very hard to stand up and say, listen, son. Thinking back now, the way I reacted was not right. But that was what I could do. When it hurts you, but you want to keep the secret, this is what I did instinctively.
Csanád flips through a photo album.
These are my parents' wedding photos. My father was 24, my mother 23.
Now with Magdolna.
How did it feel when Mum married a non-Jewish man?
By then, we were so good at the illusion. We'd been Christians for I don't know how long. We thought it was nice to have a bit of outbreeding.
Outbreeding?
Well, yes, not a Jew marrying another Jew.
Magdalena blinks, smiling peacefully. A rural landscape glides past as an elderly man watches from a train compartment window. On board, the elderly brunette sits with her forearm bared.
Does she have a tattoo?
Not there, not on the outside. I asked my grandma how I've lived 30 years and never seen the tattoo. How is that possible? She said she was so ashamed of it. She always wore long sleeves, buttoned up at the wrist.
I always covered it up. We never talked about it. Nobody wanted to know. They didn't want to listen because they didn't believe it. And it seemed as though we were not telling the truth. There were so many things to cope with. We came home ill. We felt useless.
Photos show townspeople posed beside debris and burning wreckage.
Across Europe, everybody had problems, and we were just yet another complication.
Women sift through ruins.
We weren't of any interest to anyone. They didn't want to know about it.
People linger in front of bombed-out buildings.
We constantly have this feeling. Why are we around at all? Who will accept us? We always felt the shame of it.
A woman bears a distressed child on her shoulder.
My grandma, she was 25 when she was transported, almost at the same time as you, Bobby.
I only started to talk about it 10 years ago. Before that, nobody in this world knew where I was, what I was, what happened.
Bobby shakes her head. Footage shows people gathered at a rally.
Death to Jews! Auschwitz isn't this way. We'll take you there camping for free. If we smack that smile off your face, you wouldn't be so happy anymore. No one talks about the oppression suffered by this nation. It's always the Holocaust, Holocaust, Holocaust. Why do we have to talk about this? Why not about my family?
A toddler holds a Jobbik balloon.
Was there a Holocaust or wasn't there? I don't actually even care.
Chanad and Rabbi Oberlander dine with others.
I have my doubts about the sincerity of his journey. The way I see it, he couldn't ride our train anymore, so he boarded their one. That one leads somewhere completely different. Now he's inventing a story of why he changed trains.
Chanad puts on a kippah and prayer shawl.
Jewish law says that whoever was born to a Jewish mother is Jewish. Therefore, Chanad Segedi is Jewish. God can see into my soul. He can see how genuine my actions are. He wants to learn. He has to be accepted. He wants to change. Precisely a year to the day after I quit Jobbik, on the 30th of July 2013, I had my circumcision. Basically, this was, if you like, my bar mitzvah. When the lunch was over, we said the blessing. And there was a symbolic dance. I was standing there, thinking, only a year earlier, I'd quit Jobbik. I get circumcised, and then I'm dancing with these Jews with the big beards and the hats at the chief rabbi's flat. This just wasn't possible. That was the moment when I felt like this chain, this pan-generational chain that had been broken by the Holocaust, was repaired again.
Posing with other congregants, Chanad and Oberlander share a laugh.
Every day he's working on changing his identity and strengthening his new identity. He says he wants to be part of the Jewish community, fine. He can, but he still has a job. He has to apologize, but apologize meaning publicly, and also more importantly, fix what he harmed.
A sign on a building reads, Bahnhof Potsdamer Platz. Text appears, Jewish Youth Conference, Berlin, Germany. Chanad stands at a podium draped with a banner reading, We Together Now.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Shalom.
Hello. How should we start? By saying hello, I suppose. I'm not sure. Well, the text is going to be fairly spontaneous, so I'll start by saying, ladies and gentlemen, I am very pleased to see so many of you here tonight. I hope everything is kosher.
Chanad places a kippah on his head as he eyes his reflection in a mirror. He slips his feet into shoes before lacing them.
Being Jewish is like a flower that's full of spikes when you look at it from afar. It stings. It's unpleasant. For us 21st century Jews, the image of Judaism begins with anti-Semitism and the Holocaust. But so long as we approach this flower and take off the stinging, unpleasant facade, we can see a beautiful, colorful flower with a pleasant scent that Judaism as a religion and the tradition of our elders signify. And at the core of this flower, we find the light itself, the Torah.
A man faces us.
To be honest, I'm not quite sure, should I believe him or should I not believe him? How can somebody so extremely change his position?
We ought to live as our predecessors did 3,000 years ago. We shouldn't think straight away about the Holocaust, about just the Holocaust era and the yellow star pinned on the chest when we think about the Star of David.
Another listener opines.
It's really hard for me to see him here right in the middle of us, see him standing and talking to us and telling us, I'm a Jew, I'm a real Jew, believe me. I'm proud to be Jewish. I really don't believe him.
I didn't want to become a Jew, but you're a Jew even with only one drop of Jewish blood in you. The mind of an anti-Semite works in a certain way, and I should know that if you have a barrel of water and you put a drop of ink in it, the entire barrel full of water is tainted.
Chanad fields questions.
Are you now using your rhetorical and charismatic capabilities to undo the damage you did? Can you now or ever say you have given up all these traces and become a complete Jew?
Hello, Mr. Segedi. I am also Hungarian myself. One of the reasons I am in Germany is because of people like you, Mr. Segedi. From my perspective, this is a big fake. This is a big show you are putting on for us.
Chanad licks his lips and bows his head.
I know this road is not paved with applause and cheering. I totally understand if this is someone's point of view. It doesn't feel nice. It feels rubbish. Of course it feels rubbish. But I really hope those who doubt me will be disproven. There's nothing else I can do.
There's a concept in Judaism about teshuva, repentance. God gives every person the ability to repent And Maimonides says repentance means, how should we say it, regret the bad deeds of the past and make a strong commitment for the future.
Are there any prayers or psalms that you still remember?
Well, there was one we sang on Hanukkah. My refuge, my rock of salvation, I've forgotten the rest.
In the family photo, the view focuses on an elderly woman seated behind young Magdolna.
My great-grandmother is buried at the Jewish cemetery of Miskolc on the side of the Avash. My grandmother hadn't been there for 40 years so that people wouldn't see that she's Jewish. Reluctantly, she eventually agreed to come with me.
Magdolna's mother wears her gray hair in a loose chignon.
We finally found her mother's grave. It had been overgrown by trees and bushes. The headstone had fallen, and the writing on it had faded.
In a photo, Chanad crouches by a headstone.
Then something interesting happened. She took out a prayer book from her purse and read a psalm from it. I turned to my grandmother and said that I wanted to restore the grave. She said that I shouldn't do it, that I shouldn't have done it.
In a still image, Magdolna pays her respects at the Holocaust memorial.
Then, when she saw the picture, she was so happy she started to cry, and she hugged me saying, "Thank you so much." A few months later, on her deathbed, when I talked to my grandmother for the last time, in her last few words to me, she thanked me once again for restoring her mother's grave.
Catalin opens a glass door, and Shanad follows her inside a residence. From a corridor, Shanad opens another door. As he flicks a wall switch, a room fills with light. He turns on the light in another room before proceeding down a hallway. As he continues turning on lights, his mother watches from a doorway. Later, they eye the black and white framed portrait of their ancestors.
This is the happy young couple.
It was taken on their wedding day, 24th September 1946, when they returned after the war. You can see the hope of a new start in this photo. My childhood memories in the family are of feeling totally safe and secure. A photo of Catalin with her parents appears. Their marriage was about supporting each other and absolute trust.
Az egymásra hagyatkozás és teljes bizalom.
I was careful what I asked her about.
Amiről kérdeztem.
I knew there were wounds. I didn't want to reopen
them. Az a kímélet mindig bennem volt, hogy nem.
But deep in your heart, do you feel it's better now?
I don't know. I can't answer that.
But now you can't talk to her about it.
Sure, but I can't love or hug or care for her either. She always said that it was in the interest of the next generation.
Ennyi, tehát ők szó nem volt arról, hogy tehát ők nem akarták, hogy még valaki az utódok közül.
She didn't want us to experience that horror and discrimination.
Annak a negatív megkülönböztetését is meg kelljen, hogy élje.
What is it like to be here now?
Szerintem még
I can't find the words. Her absence hurts me.
Csak nagyon süt a hiánya. Tehát
the view lingers on the framed photo of Catalin's parents held above her lap. Seen from above, railroad ties blur past. As the barren ground zips by, a second set of tracks diverges from the first, then glides from view.
For some reason, I was unable to go to Auschwitz while she was still alive. I just couldn't. There was some psychological barrier in me. If I had gone to Auschwitz, I wouldn't have been able to talk to her about it or look her in the eye.
More pairs of tracks split from the first.
Before she died, she told me her memories from Auschwitz.
Magdolna takes out a small weathered paper in German bearing an official stamp.
The whole time she was talking, without tears, without hatred, without protest, but simply, just as historical fact. But I was still doubting, even whilst she told me. The story was still so unbelievable. I said, Granny, are you sure that this all happened like that? Couldn't you have misunderstood? Couldn't you have seen it wrong?
We left on Tuesday. They put us in the wagons in the morning. 80 of us in a cattle wagon. We couldn't bring much. A backpack for clothes and towels and such. We wore two or three layers of clothes, and we also brought some bags of food.
Eva Bobby Newman, Auschwitz-Birkenau survivor.
I said, this can't be happening. It's a mistake. Mom and Dad kept saying that it won't last long. Where are we going? We don't know. How far are we going? We don't know. Where are we going? We don't know. There's no water. Everyone was crying. Some were praying and crying.
Chonad walks in the center of train tracks as a younger woman escorts Bobby beside the rails.
It's hard to imagine the trains with thousands of people being transported.
The younger, dark-haired woman keeps close to the older woman's side.
You can't imagine the terror of it. Even I can hardly imagine it. Everything ran like clockwork.
A photo shows a multitude of detainees assembled alongside a train. In another, prisoners in striped uniforms stand near uniformed guards.
This whole area was packed with people. There were a million people here.
In a photo from a historical book, women wear drab work dresses and headscarves.
This is me and all my relatives, all the Birnbaums.
In a photo of her teenage self, Bobby gazes absently among a line of other prisoners.
In me, there was emptiness. You can see it in my face. I was numb, no feelings inside, no thoughts. There was nothing. We just did as we were told. They said go, we went. They said eat, we ate. We had no feelings about anything. We were like lumps of wood. Just before this photo was taken, I was with the children, my mother, my father, and the boys. By the time I turned, they were gone, and I couldn't comprehend. My mind was blank. We should all be crying in this picture, yet nobody is crying. Our souls froze, our feelings turned into stone.
Female prisoners stare blankly, their heads half bowed. Chonad trudges along the ground, surveying the landscape. In the distance, a rickety guard tower stands, with rows of barbed wire fencing beyond.
The guards in the watchtower were Germans?
Germans, yes.
And they shot at you?
Sometimes, if they were in the mood.
If they were in the mood.
Just for fun, yes.
So that scene in Schindler's List is true, when he goes out to the terrace and shoots at people.
Yes, yes.
They stand among rows of latrine pits.
The German guards would take children and put them in the toilets, right down into the thing, and tell them to take off their caps. And take out the filth with their caps and put it in buckets. Sometimes the children were told to put their caps on, which were full. There was one child who stayed in there. He didn't want to come out, and he died in there. He drowned himself in it.
Chanan nods solemnly, eyes darting. Rows of cubby-style bunks fill a dingy barracks. Bobby's hunched figure makes its way through the abandoned dormitory.
We slept like this, six of us sharing.
Six people sharing, and that?
12 of us in here, the best places are in the middle. Words can't describe how cold it was. We never knew when we came back from work who would have survived the day.
Bobby scratches her head, eyes obscured behind tinted lenses.
Everything was like my grandmother had told me. The roll calls, the way they were counted, having to stand outside in the morning and wait until the guards had counted all of them.
Children in striped clothes wait behind barbed wire.
What they got to eat, what they were wearing, how they were all shaved. They said practically the same things.
Chanad and the dark-haired woman flank Bobby past barbed wire fencing.
Who did you go with from the family?
I was with Aunt Saren, and I think with Ilonka, Kati, and maybe one more cousin, Nancy. There were five of us. I was told to turn right. Everyone else had to go to the left. Saying goodbye wasn't possible. It was just, los, quickly. They were taken straight to the gas chambers.
Magdolna blinks sadly. Crumbling remains of brick and stone buildings with blown-out walls stand at Auschwitz. Bobby and Chanad survey the rubble behind a chain-link stanchion.
This was where I worked. They were told it was a shower room. People who had no idea crematoriums existed went in quietly, but many knew. Either they lived here or came from the Polish ghettos, so they refused.
In a photo, prisoners wear Stars of David.
There would be very, very loud crying and shouting. Shots were fired in the air to drive them inside.
Three men support an elderly woman.
It was unbearable, the pandemonium, the crying, the screaming. Their last words were, Shema Israel. This is the last prayer of people who know they're about to die. It would always be sung all together, in unison. That, for us who were still alive, was a great relief. We knew their suffering was over, and those were their last words. To this day, I wonder, why am I here? Why did my mother, my father, or my little brothers have to go? My children always say, Mummy is such a pessimist. This isn't pessimism. It's something I can't shake. The question, why are they gone and not me? For example, there's a baby, a grandchild, a great-grandchild who I should pick up and cuddle. I can't do it.
Bobby shakes her head and smiles ruefully. Removing her glasses, she wipes her eyes with a tissue. She puts her spectacles back on before blowing her nose.
I never allow myself to show my feelings.
Beneath her lenses, she presses the tissue tightly to her eyes.
You live with it. You have no choice but to live with it. You can't get rid of it, and you never can. You can never forget it.
And I don't want to either. That's the way it is.
The view pivots away from Bobby and falls on Shanad. He stares thoughtfully into the distance, gaze shifting.
When we got to the crematorium, that was piercing. The room where they were gassed.
Az a terem, ahol elgázosították őket. Utána
then their bodies were moved to the crematorium
and burnt in the ovens.
They took the ashes and put them in a ditch, a ditch with water in it, so the ashes wouldn't fly around.
A lump comes to Chanad's throat, then he licks his lips. Blinking back tears, he bows his head.
So,
at the crematorium, what hit me was that
nagyon megdöbbentő, hogy
my great-grandfather has no grave. Most of the family have no graves. And this crematorium.
With trembling lips, Chanad hunkers forward. He dabs one eye with a pudgy finger, then straightens to reveal his reddened eyes moist with tears.
So I was standing at the crematorium, and that is their grave.
He bows his head, lips quivering. A man wraps a black leather band around his left arm, first above the elbow, then down his forearm and wrist, until the end encircles his middle finger. Next, Chanad produces a small black prayer box, kisses it, and straps it to his forehead. An end of the strap dangles loosely from his arm. A view moves up along Chanad's bound arm as he leans forward, clenched hands digging into a lectern.
I was there at the beginning in Jobbik when we started to push the boundaries. I caused so much harm with anger intentions that we in Jobbik generated within society, including myself. I was one of the major generators of anger.
Chanad rocks back and forth as he murmurs prayers from a book in Hungarian.
For some reason, this is my path. If I hadn't sunk so deep, then there'd be no chance to rise again. In the future, I will work towards atoning for the sins I have committed.
Nearby, Rabbi Oberlander sways on his feet and strokes his beard.
Coming from the extreme right to the point where he is now is a very long way. He feels bad for the things that he did in the past. It's not enough. It has to become a lecture that he will repeat again and again and again, that I was wrong, Jobbik was wrong, and anti-Semitism is wrong. So is he finished? No, he's not finished. But is he going in the right direction? Absolutely.
At night, an airplane glides across the starless sky, lights flickering intermittently near its landing gear. In an airport terminal, signage for arrivals is displayed in French and English. A custodian pushes a cleaning cart. Text appears, Montreal, Canada. In the arrivals area, as loved ones exchange greetings, Chanad pulls his rolling luggage cart.
As I got off the plane, Canadian immigration spotted me. They asked why I was coming to Canada. This ended up being a 3-hour interrogation. They had a huge file this thick about me. There was a photo of me taking my European Parliament seat in a Hungarian Guard uniform in Strasbourg 2009. When the Hungarian Guard was founded, what its role was, it was a whole file on me.
Csanád rolls his luggage towards an exit. Later, he talks on the phone.
Hi, Baruch. It's Csanád. They kept my passport, the diplomatic passport I traveled with, and I have to be at the airport again tomorrow by 5 p.m., and I have to take that plane back to Budapest.
Csanád gazes out a car window.
I expected to walk into Canada quite easily as a citizen of Hungary, of the European Union, especially as a member of the European Parliament, and spend a very useful 2 days with the people and leaders of the local Jewish community. Now I won't be able to make a connection with these people. They won't be able to see the true flesh and blood Csanád Szegedy.
Various images of Montreal appear.
A year and a half ago, Csanád was the king of the anti-Semites. Now, Csanád wants to be the king of the Semites. Montreal is the single Jewish community outside of Israel with the largest percentage of survivors. Bringing a guy like Csanád is really deeply insensitive.
The soul, whether you want to look at the religious viewpoint or in general, is a very interesting piece of equipment, and we don't know. Nobody can look at
it. I represent 600,000 Jews who've been killed. I am represent the people, include my family, my parents, who've been killed by a Hungarian Nazi.
And there was always anti-Semitism under various guises. You know what they say? If it walks like a duck and it talks like a duck, it must be a duck.
Rabbi Oberlander rides with Csanád.
Oh, Csanád, what have you got yourself into?
Csanád smiles.
The last time that I was here was in 83. That means 30 years ago. 30 years, but that was in much more relaxed circumstances. Are you a member of the Hungarian Guard? No.
Seated side by side in the back of the vehicle, Oberlander and Csanád get jostled as it travels over rough roadway.
You always have to watch out, but especially in situations like this. You mustn't say anything that is not 100% true.
Csanád gazes out the window, a kippa covering his head. He absently flexes his elbow a few times before lowering his arm. Later in an apartment, he removes takeout from a bag.
All kosher.
Do you have notes with you? Or you don't need them? No time to go through notes anymore. I'll do it by heart. Just gather your thoughts together. Okay.
In an empty lecture hall, as Csanád paces to a podium, his image appears in a camera's viewfinder.
Tell me when we can go.
Which
camera is it?
Okay.
By the time this lecture is heard, I will already have had to leave Canada.
Later, Oberlander and others watch the pre-recorded address.
I am aware that a lot of people had doubts about my visit to Canada. Many raised questions. How can someone, who only 2 years ago was a prominent member of Jobbik, an extreme right-wing party, be credible? How can he speak honestly about Judaism when 5 years ago he was part of the creation of the Hungarian Guard?
Csanád and Oberlander ride an escalator to an upper floor of the airport terminal, then stride side by side.
Are you a man of peace? Am I a man of peace? Have you always been? Not always, but I am now.
In the lecture hall.
I have to say, both to the Canadian Jewish community and all Jewish people, I am just as much a Jew as they are. I can't help this.
In the terminal.
Thanks for being here for me and helping out. Be brave. You keep saying that to me. Because you still need it.
In the lecture hall, a viewer points accusingly.
Mr. Szegedy was the poster boy in Central Europe for anti-Semitism. He was vice president of the Jobbik Nazi Party, and during that time, he never missed an opportunity to express his anti-Semitism.
We Jews believe in teshuva. We have to give every person a chance of repenting.
He created an atmosphere, an anti-Semitic atmosphere in the city, that when you say, you dirty Jew, it's just like saying hello.
My part of the story is that I decided give him a chance. That's what Judaism teaches us. Love every Jew, give him a chance. I really believe I will never become an anti-Semite. Okay, so please don't scream at me.
As Chanad stares out the window on his flight, two men confront Oberlander.
He's an anti-Semite Jew.
Used to be. He
was an anti-Semite.
Blood will tell. Yes, he was born a Jew and he will stay one. Yes, blood will tell.
The end of discussion.
If you're born Jewish, you'll stay Jewish.
Chanad stares thoughtfully, face bathed in warm light shining through the window.
What do you call a real Jew? Is he eating kosher? Yes. Is he praying? He puts on the tefillin? Yes. Then I'll tell you something. Besides being a Nazi, he became a Jew. Could be. But this type of Nazi I like.
Bright light through the window casts Chanan's face in silhouette, his expression inscrutable.
In the case of Chanad, there will always be a question of what's true. Anybody who makes that kind of identity shift from, you know, far right to Orthodox Jew will always be questioned, and people will always have some doubt about what he says. He himself says that he feels that he's a better person now that he's being honest about who he is, but that maybe that's just another game.
At synagogue, Chanad joins other worshippers, wearing his striped prayer shawl, kippah, and prayer box strapped to his head.
When someone extends their identity and overrides their ideology, it is a process far too complex and far too difficult to complete overnight.
A man hands a blue velvet mantle emblazoned with the crown of Torah to a second man. Then other worshippers kiss and touch the sacred object as it passes.
The truth is, the change is in progress up to the present day. Truth is that in a decade, I may well still be processing this.
Chanad confers with a bearded man who wears a prayer shawl, then gazes at a book held open by a third man who gives a thumbs up. Rabbi Oberlander glances over his shoulder, then straightens his white head covering.
You have to love every Jew, no matter how wicked. Well, I found a very wicked one. You see, you have to love every Jew and you have to try to help him. In a way, you have to love every person and try to help. If you're able to help somebody, you have no right not to help him.
Chanad looks on as the rabbi rocks gently back and forth.
It wasn't an easy decision, but I felt it was the right decision. And I really hope and I really believe that I will not be disappointed. I pray that I shouldn't be disappointed.
Rabbi Oberlander nods, gazing earnestly. In synagogue, Chanan takes his place among other worshippers, including the rabbi. Leaning down, he touches a finger to his lips.
Blessed are you, Hashem, our God, ruler of the universe, who has given us the Torah of truth and implanted within us eternal life. Blessed are you, Hashem, provider of the Torah. Would I turn my back on Judaism?
Chanad stares thoughtfully, tilting his head side to side.
I don't know. I can't answer that. It is possible, but I don't think it's very likely.
Nem tudom.
I don't know. I don't know.
Cut to black. Credits appear. Directed by Joseph Martin, Sam Blair. Produced by Alex Holder. Produced by Danielle Clark, Nicole Stott. Editors, Ben Stark, Kim Gaster. Original score, Philip Shepard. Director of Photography, Marton Viscaletti. Executive Producer, John Batsek. Executive Producers, Kami Nagdi, Andrew Ruman. More credits roll. Copyright AJH Films Limited, 2015. All rights reserved. This motion picture is protected under the laws of the United States, Canada, and other countries. And its unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition may result in civil liability and criminal prosecution. Logos appear. AJH Films, Passion Pictures, Kook Films.